From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
On the panel this week, Emily Tamkin, foreign affairs reporter for BuzzFeed News, and Philippe Gelly, U.S. chief correspondent for Le Figaro. Our moderator is West Wing Reports correspondent and USA Today columnist Paul Brandis.
Hello, thank you for joining us, and here are the issues. The long arm of the law catches up with two of President Donald Trump's closest associates, a shocking scandal involving the Catholic Church and the sexual abuse of children, hundreds of them, and the trade war between the United States and China has deepened. Well, first, our listeners around the world might not know the following two names, Paul Manafort and Michael Cohen, but Manafort was the former campaign manager for Donald Trump's presidential campaign 2 years ago. Michael Cohen, of course, was the president's a longtime attorney handling all kinds of things. Now, both men are looking at years in prison. This, of course, a double dose of bad news for President Trump himself. Emily Tamkin, latest first, explain for our audience what these men have done.
Okay, where to start? So Michael Cohen, who pled guilty and whose lawyer, Lanny Davis, has made clear that he is willing to cooperate with the broader investigation into Trump's doings, he was found guilty of basically violating campaign finance law. Manafort, on the other hand, was not found guilty on anything related to the Trump campaign, right? It was sort of previous tax evasion and dealings related to his work as a lobbyist and a political Machiavelli-esque figure in Ukraine. But the hope was that by putting pressure on him through this trial, or people assume the hope was and is that by putting pressure on him through this trial, that he will give information about the Trump campaign, given his starring role in it for a time. So Cohen has already sort of implied or suggested that he is willing to cooperate. Manafort has not, and actually Trump sent out a tweet, of course, saying what a brave man Paul Manafort is, how much he respects the fact that he didn't quote unquote flip, sort of signaling that he would be looking to pardon Paul Manafort.
Now, Philippe, Emily just gave us kind of a good overview of what this is occurring here, but tell our listeners in a little more detail why this is so important. I mean, so far there's not been any hard evidence yet of this so-called collusion between either Trump or the Trump campaign and the Russians. So far, again, no hard evidence of that. So why is this a matter for the president?
Well, it's a problem for the president because you have, for the first time, one of his partners, a long-time partner, Michael Cohen, who before a federal court accuses him of being an accomplice in a felony regarding electoral law. I mean, this is something by itself with any other president and probably any other elected official, we would be talking resignation or impeachment. Nothing is happening yet on this front. You have the president fighting back against Michael Cohen, saying he was a very small employee of his dealings when he was a real estate investor. On the contrary, Paul Manafort, who took the hit for things, again, that are not related to the campaign, but that show that Trump was associated with someone who's basically a crook. And that's someone he picked at a very critical time in the campaign when he had to convinced the Republicans to choose him as the candidate before the convention. But this guy took the hit without betraying him. And we are in a time when a lot of people around Donald Trump betray him, be it Omarosa Manigo Newman, who worked at the White House and now publishes a book, very damaging for Donald Trump, be it Cohen, be it his friend David Pecker, heading the AMI
it's
group.
Very prominent publisher.
Exactly. You were publishing the National Enquirer, who apparently has struck a deal with the prosecutors to say what he has in his coffers, in his safe. And there are a lot of secret contracts in his safe. I mean, it's really very troubled waters around the president at this time.
Now, what's interesting is that we're talking about in Donald Trump a person who always likes to brag about how he hires only the very best people, and yet look at this long list, perhaps getting longer list of people who are now looking at, as we've said, a long time in prison. And the president always seems surprised when these people flip against him. How is it, and what does it say about the president when he kind of surrounds himself with unsavory characters like this? And I think we can use that term when we're talking about people who've been convicted of felonies. That's who they are. How is it that the president, who always talks about how good his judgment is, surrounds himself with people like that? How does that happen?
Well, I think two things are important. One, Paul Manafort got away with what he was doing for years and had this investigation into Trump's alleged potential ties to Russia not happened, probably would have continued to get away with tax evasion, with stealing money from the American and Ukrainian people, et cetera. So that's number one, right? I mean, there's a broader conversation to be had here about the work of lobbyists, foreign influence in American politics. But separate from that, and actually our White House correspondent, Tarini Parti, had a very good piece on this that your listeners can read at BuzzFeedNews.com. Basically on how Trump has these really, really prizes two things, loyalty and self-preservation. But those two are coming up against each other, right? Because he sort of doesn't understand how loyalty wouldn't trump self-preservation for other people, even though for him, it's his own self that matters so clearly the most, is sort of the read, according to former White House officials in this piece, right? Mm-hmm. So it keeps happening because he has surrounded himself with people who conduct business in a certain way. Perhaps he himself conducts business in this way. And because, I guess what I'm coming at is there's this expression, no honor among thieves. And I think that some would say that that's what you're seeing in the White House right now.
Philippe? Yeah, what you see is that loyalty that is branded as so important by the president, in fact, doesn't exist around him. Because all those people are pretty much convinced that he would betray them as well. And so there is no such thing as genuine friendship or respect for the man. And that's where his troubles come from. And they won't stop. They won't stop there, probably.
You know, the issue about this loyalty, it's interesting that, you know, the president has always demanded loyalty of others but does not extend it himself. And he always seems surprised when these people, you know, flip and cooperate with these federal prosecutors.
Exactly.
I mean, if you were looking at years in prison and you have a family to feed, that's just what people like Michael Cohen are doing. You mentioned earlier, Philippe, that in another time, perhaps with another president, we might be talking about something like impeachment. Well, the president himself is now talking about that. He's predicting that he might be impeached if the Democrats take the House.
Yeah.
This is now top of mind for him, apparently.
It's very interesting that he himself uses it, and the Republicans in general are using the argument as a rallying cry for their voters to go out and vote on November for the midterm election. Because if they don't and let the Democrats take over the Congress, even only the lower chamber, they would try to impeach the president. Whereas the Democrats themselves are very shy on this issue because they think it's counterproductive. They don't want to repeat the mistakes of the Clinton campaign in 2016 that was entirely focused on the ability of Donald Trump of being president. And they think they have to speak of real issues like education, healthcare, and immigration, and that the voters already know about the troubles that this president has with the justice system and with the law. So you are in the middle of something when, I mean, it's upside down, in fact. The opposition doesn't speak about impeachment, and the presidential camp speaks about impeachment as a useful tool for their election campaign.
The one thing that these, Emily, I'll turn to you on this one, the Democrats are not, so, some Democrats are talking about impeachment, but I think others understand that the issue that Americans seem to care more about is just the appearance of corruption and cronyism. Is that a viable issue for them, you think?
I think I agree with Philippe in that I think they're going to focus more on health care, on immigration, on issues that have come under attack from this administration that they think will get out voters. Because I believe it was the Huffington Post that published the survey. 73% of Americans were not following the Manafort trial, right? That doesn't mean that they're uneducated, that they're bad people. It means that they haven't been following the Manafort trial, right? So how do you campaign on the depth of corruption in the circle, in the system,
when if people
haven't been following it?
So this is all just a bunch of inside Washington stuff that people around the country don't particularly care.
And I don't mean to suggest that it's not important, right? As a journalist and as a U.S. citizen, I think it's very important. But 73% of Americans don't.
Right.
What I think is, what we see is fear, in fact. And I think fear, we know fear plays a role in police states. We didn't know fear plays a role in media state or even a social media state. But everybody fears what the president will say. If you're a Republican candidate and you speak up against the president, you may get tweets, you may get non-endorsements, you may have a rival in a primary that will be supported by the president. They are afraid of what this president can do with his Twitter account.
And what's also interesting is that when people talk about, the campaign, that some people say, look, the more these Democrats attack the president, it's just going to energize, rev up Trump's base, which still appears to be quite solidly behind him. So that might be rather counterproductive anyway.
Yeah. Right? And there is also one issue left, which is will the president pardon Paul Manafort? If he wants to pardon him, and everybody advised the president not to do it, but you could hear when he gave an interview to Fox News this week that he was tempted to do it. And he ought to do it this right now, because there will be a second trial for Manafort in the fall. And it's more than possible that the Manafort will come out of this second trial as a henchman of a pro-Russian ex-Ukrainian president, Viktor Yanukovych. And that would be much more difficult for the president to pardon him at that time.
All right. Well, let's pause for a short break. More issues in the news in just a moment.
A reminder that Issues in the News is coming to you from Washington on the Voice of America, and that it is available for free download on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. And don't forget to like us on Facebook, Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel. Emily Tamkin, foreign affairs reporter for BuzzFeed News, and Philippe Gély, U.S. chief correspondent for Le Figaro. Our moderator is Paul Brandis of West Wing Reports and USA Today.
Welcome back. This next topic is deeply disturbing. There's really no other way to describe it. In Pennsylvania, that's one of the 50 states here in the United States, a report that up to 1,000 children were sexually abused by hundreds of priests by the Roman Catholic Church. And this is apparently going back 70 years. The report says that priests persuaded victims not to report their own abuse and law enforcement not to investigate it. All of this according to a searing report by a grand jury. You know, Emily, no less an authority than Pope Francis himself has called these atrocities. What happens now?
I mean, that's my question, right? Like, what is Pope Francis, what are the authorities within the Catholic Church going to do such that we stop hearing horrible stories about priests abusing their power, abusing their relationship to families, and abusing children? I would say that the idea that somebody abuses or harasses somebody and is then moved around to another position instead of facing consequences professionally, that is not unique to the Catholic Church, right? We're seeing that across industries. You see it in government, you see it in the private sector, but certainly you're seeing it on a very wide scale in Pennsylvania.
And Philippe, the report says there are actually perhaps thousands more victims whose records were lost or perhaps are or were too afraid to come up. This possibly could be just the tip of the iceberg, the Roman Catholic Church. How could something like this even happen?
Well, the big issue, I mean, you're right, Emily is right, the crime happens everywhere, but the systematic cover-up here is the issue, is at least for the church, but also for the victims. And you have the Pope, Pope Francis, who is about to meet some victims in Ireland, who wrote a letter saying, I mean, it was good in the sense that he acknowledged and asked for forgiveness, for he expressed sorrow and shame. But it was very, very short on specifics in about any plan to of action to have this stop and change the culture that, I mean, this culture of cover-up went stretched up all the way almost to cardinals in the Vatican. Even the former cardinal of Washington, Carrick, has had to resign because he molested young priests and seminarians. So the Pope has to do more, I think, and the Church has to do more. I think it may become a matter of survival in several countries for the Church.
Here's one thing that the Pope said, Emily, and he says, I acknowledge once more the suffering endured by many minors due to sexual abuse. And he says, it's with, and I'm quoting here, shame and repentance, that he acknowledged that the Church has been far too slow in acknowledging the problem. And what on earth can and should it do to keep this kind of thing from happening again?
You know, this is a very different situation that I'm about to reference, but I wrote a piece once on sexual harassment within the Foreign Service, and a lawyer to whom I spoke for that piece said it keeps happening and it is going to keep happening until people face consequences for their actions. If they are just promoted, if they are just moved around, it is going to keep happening. This is not the first crisis of abuse in the Catholic Church that has happened in my lifetime, right? So, you know, you can profess shame and anguish and all of that, but as long as crimes are covered up, as long as people keep just moving around from church to church, as long as people aren't facing consequences and are held in some way accountable for their actions, it will keep happening. That is the letter I would like to hear from the Pope.
Exactly, and the Pope himself has been slow to react. I mean,
absolutely.
Back in January, he was in Chile, and he accused accusators of slander against bishops there. And he later said that he had been misled and he was misinformed. But maybe it's out of the difficulty to realize the gravity and the widespread crime that it's almost unfathomable that you are heading an institution that is supposed to do good and to act in the name of God, and that is doing so many crimes all over the place.
Well, that's the word. These are crimes, in fact. And in a letter, a statement rather, that Pennsylvania's bishops released a few days ago, they called for prayers for the victims and promised greater openness. I mean, prayers, we're talking about crimes here. I mean, as Emily has said, maybe these people should be just tossed in jail. These are crimes.
Yeah, and there is the status of limitation. And so you have only two cases that have been presented in court. So there must be also probably some sort of reform. And there is talk of reforming the status of limitation that prevent the victims to have a trial on their case after a few years.
Interesting. Emily, any final point on this?
I was just going to say, I'm not saying that people should be tossed in jail without due process, but I do think that if you're just going to keep moving priests around, right, you know, if right. an allegation comes up at one church, you move them to another, that's not going to work if you were serious about reforming your system.
All right. Well, finally, on a very different topic here, you know, the Trump administration is fighting this forefront trade war, China, Canada, Mexico, European Union. It looks like the trade and tariff war with China appears to be the most problematic. Just in recent days, each side has issued more tariffs against the other. There was a series of talks between Washington and Beijing in recent days that appeared to have gone nowhere. So where do things stand here, Emily? Where's all this going?
Few points south of nowhere. No, the problem is there are two problems. One, despite the fact that the president says this is about the trade deficit with China, according to officials both in the U.S. and in China, this is more about challenging China's industrial policy and their sort of made in China 2025, mm-hmm. right? This desire to be a leader in AI and robotics. So the concessions that the administration wants to see from China are not going to be made because China wants to be a leader in AI and robotics and in sort of the industry of the future. So you may see some small concessions on IP protection, right? But the things that the U.S. actually wants to see, China is not going to do, in part because, as you say, the U.S. is also waging trade war on various other fronts. To get China to do the sort of thing that the U.S. wants it to do, which is a pretty drastic rewrite of how it functions economically, it would help if the U.S. were not acting alone in this. And the U.S. is, because we've decided to slap tariffs on a variety of our closest allies.
You know, Philippe, there's no question that both sides are feeling the pain here. I mean, American companies, American farmers, American manufacturers even are complaining that the cost of commodities, the things they need to produce, everything from, you know, cars to tuna fish cans, on and on and on. But then in China itself, there are complaints that even they're being hurt. The Chinese stock market has really fallen sharply this year. Is this just possibly a question of who can endure the most pain and wait for somebody else to give in?
I think, yes, it's in large part, it's a poker game. And the first who blinks loses. And you have to acknowledge that the Trump administration has a pretty strong hand, at least on the short term, with a very strong growth in the U.S., whereas there is a slowdown in China. As you mentioned, the stock exchange, I mean, the Dow Jones is almost at records, and the Shanghai stock exchange has plunged 19% since the beginning of this year. I think Donald Trump himself understands very well that this is a poker game and the circumstances are good for him to try to do this. The method is not the best. As Emily mentioned, you should do this if you want to China to play by different rules. You should do this with the Europeans. You shouldn't wage a parallel war with the Europeans, the European Union is still the first biggest market in the world. And they have the same complaints about intellectual property and everything. But this president thinks that he can fight both at the same time, although there is a pause in the fight with the Europeans, but maybe not for long, because if he puts tariffs on European cars, by the way, we could enter in the detail, and it's totally, the argument is totally wrong, because he said that American cars are taxed. I mean, what happens is that the cars that the Europeans buy are taxed, and the pickups, the European pickups that the American buys are also taxed 25%. But let's put that aside. It's a poker game. We are now at $50 billion in tariffs, soon to be $250 billion, because 200 more are in the process of being studied and so on. What we have to keep in mind, I think, and if I was part of this administration, that's something I would keep in mind, the Chinese always play on the long term. And President Trump has a midterm election in 10 weeks. And he has to have his eyes on the ball, on this electoral side of the story. So far, he's been doing policy that is so old-fashioned. I mean, tariffs on the one hand, subsidies to help the agricultural farmers in the U.S. on the other hand. How long can you do that? And it's not even legal in terms of the WTO.
And kind of quickly, Emily here, you were talking about this China 2025 policy. They want to be a world leader. And you mentioned artificial intelligence and robotics and additive manufacturing, all of these things. The one thing that people, including the president, aren't really talking about is a far bigger issue, and it's this massive cyber theft that the Chinese are involved in. I think a couple of studies that I've read, $600 billion U.S. intellectual property, raiding companies' websites and this kind of thing, just stealing whatever they can. $600 billion, far greater than the cost of these tariffs that we're talking about. What's being done about that?
Well, I do think that they consider part of this to be about intellectual property theft. But you're right, the U.S. as a whole is not. And part of this, I think, is because in the realm of cyber interference and cyber theft, we're so focused on Russia, for obvious reasons, that what China's doing sort of gets lost in the proverbial shuffle. It is a big issue. And as Philippe was saying, this is something where the Europeans share concerns and where we could perhaps work together if things were different.
All righty. We're going to have to end it right there. Thanks to two of Washington's most prominent journalists, Philippe Gilly of Le Figaro and Emily Tamkin. She's a foreign affairs reporter for BuzzFeed News. This program was produced by the Voice of America Current Affairs, our engineer, Justin Thwaites. And I'm Paul Brandis of USA Today and White House correspondent for West Wing Reports. Thanks for joining us.